You're listening to a Frequency Podcast Network production.
Where's the line between election influence and election interference? What did our prime minister know and when? And what did he do about it? Are Canada's elections safe and secure? How safe? How secure, exactly? These are all huge questions. Here's one more. How much should we be told about all of that if telling us could compromise our efforts to prevent that interference or harm the ability of our intelligence services to operate in general? This is the paradox we've been confronting over the past few weeks as an inquiry into foreign election interference has attempted to walk a tightrope between public transparency and effective intelligence gathering. The penultimate example of that came on Wednesday afternoon when Prime Minister Justin Trudeau attempted to finesse both sides of the equation.
So would you say that the content of this particular, these notes, these briefing notes, accurately conveys what you were told during that briefing?
Not particularly.
Today, the inquiry will conclude with the director of CSIS, who may well recall those conversations differently than the prime minister. If that happens, it will raise even more serious questions about who exactly is telling Canadians the truth and how much of it. No matter what happens, though, the biggest question remains. We now know that foreign governments are trying to interfere in our elections in increasingly brazen ways. So what are we doing about it? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story. Laura Stevenson is a professor of political science at Western University and the co-director of the Consortium on Electoral Democracy. Hey, Laura.
Hi there.
I have to ask you, as somebody who has paid attention to the scandal and this inquiry, I want to know what the questions that you had going into it were. What were you hoping you'd learn from this inquiry?
Yeah, you know, there's a number of aspects that were kind of swimming around in my mind. And most importantly, I think it was actually the nature of the interference that I was curious about. I'd been paying a lot of attention to, obviously, the previous information that had come out and the directives about, you know, it not actually affecting the electoral outcome, which parties had been affected or which candidates had been targeted, I guess, more directly. But understanding a little bit more about the actual processes, what are the levers that foreign bodies are using to try and impact our elections and in turn our democracy?
Right.
That was what I was most interested in. Of course, kind of focusing on how do we avoid this, right? How do we protect ourselves against this?
And we'll talk about the details in a minute, but we often speak on this podcast about transparency from government. So I'll just ask you for your overall impression. Did your questions get answered in this process?
Yes and no. I think this is an interesting point, right? We all want transparency. We all want to know what's going on, how, why, you know, how is this impacting things? And especially when it comes to our elections,
right?
I think this is the fundamentally important thing that we're dealing with. And I've done work with Elections Canada, and I know how much effort they put into upholding the integrity of our electoral process. And yet, what is so fascinating about what has come out of these hearings is how that interest is kind of at odds with our intelligence agencies, right?
Mm-hmm.
And how they might have these competing situations where, you know, as the public hearing, oh, you know, the electoral outcome wasn't affected is one thing, but we need to be able to trust that. Like, it's a fundamental part of democracy, right? And for any of these intelligence agencies to share their information or for their information once shared to be made public, if that puts at risk other elements of Canadian democracy or the Canadian state,
right?
This is a uncharted territory, right?
Well, let's talk about some of the details then. And maybe before we get to Prime Minister Trudeau's testimony, I'll follow up on your opening statement, which is just, what did we learn about what that attempt to interfere or those attempts to interfere look like on the ground?
What I have not heard is that there's anything like what we might have seen in old movies. There's no ballot stuffing. There's no, you know, interference with the actual mechanisms of elections. Instead, what I've heard, anyways, from the testimony and my reading of them, it was very fascinating to hear that, you know, there could have been busloads of international students that were going to nomination contests to cast support for individuals that were seen as China friendly. I'll say that is the best term. But what is really interesting about that is that there's actually nothing to prevent these people from doing that.
Right.
There's nothing in the rules of the nomination contest to say that the individuals weren't allowed to be there. Now, that it was a, you know, concerted effort by a foreign body, that's the problem.
What do we know about that? Were they threatened into doing it? Were they coerced? Were they paid? Have we learned anything about like how that happened in the course of this inquiry?
Yeah, those are open questions to me. Is it suspicious? Yes, it may be suspicious, but is it known? Like, how do we know that it in fact was foreign interference? I mean, that would take a lot of digging, right? What we did hear from different instances was that there were pressures going through different types of media sources and social media campaigns and things like that, that would be pressuring diaspora communities into casting ballots. So these would be, you know, people who are eligible to vote. So these are Canadian citizens who would be allowed to make up their mind to vote however they chose, right? We don't mandate how someone can make up their mind. And they were being pressured by outside actors, right, in ways to disadvantage certain candidates. We also heard there was like misinformation that was appearing on social media that was asked to be taken down about Trudeau. And we do know that there have been attempts made to kind of regulate the kind of electoral information that gets put out there. We care about what would be called third-party advertising, right? So non-party advertising. That's been something that's been a concern for a long time. So it makes sense that that's kind of gone over into the social media world, right? But at the same time, when it's like unofficial channels, like it would be the same as, you know, asking anybody on your block, hey, you know, what influenced your vote?
Right.
Of course, we don't know. Is there coercion? Was there threats involved? All these things, which have taken into a different level. But it's kind of the amazing, I guess, vulnerability of the individual citizen decision that I think is what I take away the most from what I've been hearing.
And it's a question, I guess, of where that line is between you making up your own mind based on everything you've heard and seen, which for sure could include stuff from people who are obviously trying to influence your vote, and the other side of that line, which is where we talk about coercion and threats or bribery or whatever. But if you're not talking to the people who cast that ballot, I don't know how you would find that out.
I think that, you know, you've kind of nailed it. How do we figure out what's going on here? And then some of the other testimony that came out gave me even more pause because, you know, the question would be, well, why don't we tell people what's going on? Why don't we try to correct misinformation? It's like the disclaimers that we see on X, right? Versus things that get posted. But then what I was hearing people say is that actually then we're putting our intelligence gathering at risk. So to make public what we're hearing, sometimes it's not even substantiated. It's not clear. There's tons of evidence. It's just intel. So the processes that we would take to try and correct that in terms of pursuing free and fair elections may in fact be hindered by where the intel's coming from and what happens when you share that.
Yeah.
It's a really complex environment that we are now trying to navigate and figure out how do we maintain the integrity of our elections as well as the integrity of our, you know, of our state, I'll call it, right? The bigger picture at the, in the kind of international world. And also, of course, you know, whose interests get played out when, right? And so how do the political parties themselves play in? And actually, do we have transparency, independence, and nonpartisanship going on to, as we are trying to navigate what's happening where?
Over the course of the inquiry, what did we learn about how this information was handled and communicated to senior political staff or even the prime minister, and then where those decisions were made to inform the public or mostly to not inform the public?
You know, I'd have to say I need a better spreadsheet to keep track of every piece of information,
right?
Because it appears that some things were communicated and some weren't. Most went to not the minister and then was maybe filtered up in some cases. And a lot of the decisions were made at the level of, you know, did this affect the outcome of the election or is this having concrete effects that they would have to push forward, right? And how credible is this information? Because if we make it public, right, that's a big thing. Mm-hmm. And so how much can we trust it? Like, it was really fascinating to hear, you know, how the party dealt with the idea that potentially one of the nomination contests had been compromised. How do they figure out what to do in which case? And this is not immediately clear. I mean, but then we have O'Toole saying up to 9 seats were lost because of this.
Where would he get that kind of information from? Or where does he say he got it?
Right. So all of the parties do a lot of polling and on the ground work to try and figure out where they think they're going to get seats, right?
Sure.
So likely what happened is they found 9 seats they thought they were going to win. And in those 9 seats, this is not at the level of counting ballots, right? Like, this isn't a situation of how many hanging chads were there that, you know, what do we have to figure out?
Right.
Instead, it's a, you know, there was pressure that, and we think that pressure caused us to lose these many seats. But, you know, here's the thing. Unless you get into the mind of those voters, you don't know.
I guess one of the reasons I'm talking to you right now is because this is so confusing to wrap my head around and try to come to a determination of how much I trust the government who needs to win the next election to tell me what's going on behind the scenes in terms of people trying to influence that very election.
I mean, that's a really key point. You know, I've been paying a lot of attention to what did Trudeau say he did and did not care about. Like, Carina Gould also had some of her statements. What were they paying attention to and not paying attention to? And what did they feel it was their place to weigh in on and not? And to be fair, a lot of their information they received after the election.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where it gets tricky. I mean, I think that we want to have independent and nonpartisan bodies. And I would say Canada is really lucky with a body like Elections Canada, who does oversee things in a very nonpartisan way. But, you know, who makes the determination of whether something is in the foreign security realm, if it's in the electoral integrity realm? That's a really tricky question. And I mean, I would trust Elections Canada, I have to be honest, to be a nonpartisan look, but I'm guessing they don't have the same clearance to talk about foreign affairs that these other ministers do, right? And
right.
So maybe that's a way forward, right? To better integrate these offices.
To have it coming from an official nonpartisan office.
Yeah. I mean, we saw that in previous things, right? That weren't about foreign interference, but they were more domestic, right? Like the robocall scandal and
right.
Stuff like that, right? We have a lot of rules in place domestically to make sure all of our political actors are behaving correctly. So it's just a question of, you know, maybe should those same offices also be playing a role here? And, you know, sometimes I have to be honest, it's unclear to me that there was any clear partisan bias. Like, I haven't heard anything that really raised the alarm bells for me.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it would if I looked even in greater detail. But regardless of whether something inappropriate occurred or didn't, it, you know, this point of transparency and of the citizen trust in the electoral process is so fundamentally important that even the impression that maybe foreign actors were allowed to continue with their behaviors because of partisan preferences or incentives, that is very damning for the strength of Canadian democracy.
You mentioned the prime minister. He was the quote-unquote headliner this week as the inquiry is almost wrapped up. What did you take away from how he communicated with Canadians, but also, I guess, with the inquirers about what he decided to tell Canadians and not tell Canadians, and what impression, as somebody who cares about the health of our democracy and our elections, what impression did you take from that?
So the impression that I took was that he prioritized our intelligence gathering efforts in the sense that he didn't push further to go on the side of transparency about the electoral process. Mm. He was saying, since we don't know for sure, right? Because I think he said that a number of times, right? Like, this is intel. It's not evidence. Mm-hmm. And so do we put our intelligence gathering kind of at risk for intel rather than hard facts? And so I think his choice came down on the side of, if it wasn't fully substantiated and I could point to the wrongdoing, then we proceeded.
Over the past few weeks, what have you taken away from the testimony about not the partisan side of who told the public what and when, but about the health of our electoral process?
Yeah, so, you know, this is the interesting part of it. Our electoral process, right, as in, you know, the way we cast ballots, they get counted, et cetera. You know, I think that is strong. Mm-hmm. The question, I mean, as we outlined, you know, just a couple of minutes ago, right, is about what are the pressures being applied on individuals who are working through what would appear to be legal channels, but with these outside influences, what can we even do about that? And I'm not sure what the answer is exactly on this, because the media I listen to, or the things I read, or the opinions that I take, like all of these things, there's just, you know, everyone's mind when it comes to voting, and I study voting behavior, it's a black box, right? Yeah. I make a good guess, but that's all I can do. And everyone has their own specific combination of factors. And how do you kind of prevent these kinds of other influences is a real head scratcher. And certainly I will say that, you know, it ties in with a lot of the great research that's being done on misinformation and disinformation. Mm-hmm. And I do know that that might be one way to move forward, was just more and more information that is able to be provided about what are the candidate stances, et cetera. But I was even trying to think, like, okay, you know, if there's intel and it says that a candidate is being targeted and this is the kind of information campaign that goes forward, you know, that candidate is now going to be put in a difficult situation, right? Because on the one hand, you could say, okay, can you just discount that information and correct it, right? You can imagine someone doing that. On the other hand, that candidate wants to win, right? Mm-hmm. And so they have an incentive from whatever party to be really open about what's happening to them, right? If you can say, all right, CSIS is going to talk to you and they're going to tell you that you can't tell anyone where you're getting your infotel from, but maybe this is what you should do in your campaign, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of interesting elements to it that I was very fascinated to hear the next part of the inquiry, which I think they're going to be trying to tackle. You know, what can be done.
There is one more person, the director of CSIS, to testify today on Friday. What are you looking for from that testimony? And what happens if he goes out there and just contradicts everything the prime minister just said? Does this become a huge mess?
Well, it's not an easy, tidy thing right now. It's kind of a mess.
Yes, a bigger mess.
Yeah, I think it would be a huge mess if that was to come up, because I think then any faith in our government operating in a nonpartisan way would go out the window. So we, you know, we should pay close attention to that. Also, which guidelines were followed. I think that's something that is important, right? Because sometimes it's the definitions of what counts as interference. And what is the dividing line between giving people information and not giving people information? I think those are things that we should be paying close attention to, right? What does someone think is worthy of communicating with others in different offices and what isn't?
Right. And the difference between opinions that we're sharing possibly to influence somebody and more direct things like bringing people in, chartering buses, making payments, et cetera.
Exactly. I mean, I don't know how much they would be ever willing to share about everything, every piece of intel. But yeah, I do think that, like, those are kinds of the pieces and parts, right? Like the payments thing, right, is one important element. And, you know, what are the activities that are involved? And what do we have to be aware of? You know, like, do we have to look to see, you know, who's chartering buses around election times? You know, is that something we need to be looking at more closely? But, you know, I do think that this has got a lot of moving targets because society evolves and people are great at figuring out ways to get around detection and rules or even follow the rules in ways that might be more nefarious. And it's not easy.
So last question then, you mentioned the next phase is about, okay, well, what do we do about this? When and what should we watch for then? And also, how much might we even learn about that? Because I presume that our intelligence services don't want to advertise what they're actually doing to try to find this stuff.
You know, what I think what we're going to see is a lot of information about the lines of communication.
Right.
And I think that's where there's probably the best opportunity to clarify, you know, again, what counts as important information? Who does it need to be given to? When? How can we deal with obvious partisan conflict, but also partisan interest across the board in understanding how all of the candidates may or may not be affected? How can we, you know, bring individuals kind of into the conversation? Sometimes it might be a need to know basis, but, you know, when does it count as they should be told, basically?
Right.
Because some of the timeline issues are concerning. Like, if you tell me after the fact, what am I supposed to do about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and also, I guess, on also what is the level of what someone would take to be evidence rather than rumor? These things are things that can be affected or adjusted by the government and, of course, by a cross-partisan committee, right? Because these are about definitions and about terminology and, you know, where's the line in the sand kind of thing. And I think that they could figure out how to agree on something there because, we know, we do see alternation in power. So the Liberals aren't going to be in power forever. And, you know, the Conservatives weren't in power forever and might not be in the future, too. So when that happens, you know, they all have an interest in making sure that these rules kind of get it right. Because they don't know who's going to be targeted by whom, when.
Laura, thank you so much for this. And I guess, yeah, we just need some real lines and not blurred ones.
Thanks for having me on. It's a really interesting conversation.
Laura Stevenson of Western University and the Consortium on Electoral Democracy. That was The Big Story. For more, you can head to thebigstorypodcast.ca. You can, of course, shoot us your suggestions or your feedback, positive, negative, doesn't matter. We read every single one. The way to get it to us is through email, hello@thebigstorypodcast.ca, or phone, 416-935-5935. Joe Fish is the lead producer of The Big Story. Robin Simon is also a producer. With this show, Stephanie Phillips is our showrunner. Mary Jubrin is our digital editor. Our sound design this week was handled by Christian Proholm, Robin Edgar, Ryan Clark, and Mark Angley. Diana Kay is our manager of business development. I am your host and your executive producer, Jordan Heath Rawlings. Together, we're the Frequency Podcast Network, a division of Rogers. Thanks for listening. We have In This Economy for you tomorrow, but on Sunday, we have a special sneak preview of our next big project. It's just a little one, but we've worked so hard on it. I'm really excited to bring it to you. It'll be in the feed Sunday morning, and we'll talk Monday.